This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And it is Friday afternoon, Friday evening, depending on what part of the country you reside in. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch this afternoon. Honored to join you. I'm the president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. I have the privilege to sit in for Tony every once in a while when he's taking a well-deserved break, or probably not a break. He's actually doing his job as a pastor probably down in Louisiana right now. Great show today. Max exodus out of Florida. The citizens flee the potential punch of Hurricane Irma. We'll talk with Florida Congressman Francis Rooney about what Florida is doing to prepare for Hurricane Irma, as well as to help those who suffer as the result of the imminent damage that's going to be done by this particular storm. What's the government doing about it? What relief aid is being provided? And maybe even some questions about the debt ceiling and where do we get this money to pay for these types of things. We're then going to talk about Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, as she has revoked President Obama's 2011 guidelines, the Dear Colleague letter from the Department of Education and the Office of Civil Rights that made mandates on colleges and universities to change the way we investigate and adjudicate claims of sexual harassment and sexual assault on our campuses. Those guidelines have been revoked. I'll give my commentary on it, and we will talk to Attorney Michelle Owens accordingly, and she will bring her views to the table. Further on in the hour, we will be talking with a friend of mine, Dr. Peter Jones from Westminster Theological Seminary in Escondido, California. Peter will talk to us a little bit more about the Nashville statement. I know we've talked about that perhaps ad nauseum within your circles, but this is so important that I think it's imperative that we bring Peter on so he can tell us why he signed it and why the moral nihilism, the nihilism of our culture, of Western civilization, as it implodes upon itself through these claims of gender fluidity, and what that means when all is fluid and nothing is solid within our cultural conversations. And then as we turn the corner to the top of the hour, I'll go into a bit of a monologue and Q&A. I want your calls today. I want to have some questions and some answers and some dialogue. And we'll spend the last 15 minutes of the program doing so. Again, remember that the call-in number is 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. If you want to follow Tony on Twitter, it's T. Perkins. That's T. Perkins. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Dr. Everett Piper. That's D-R-E-V-E-R-E-T-T-P-I-P-E-R. And remember that this show is brought to you by the Family Research Center. All right, thousands of Florida residents are streaming north. They're evacuating the Sunshine State as Hurricane Irma makes its way through the Caribbean and onward toward, it looks like it's going to basically run right up the center of Florida, perhaps a little on the west coast of Florida versus the east coast, but the damage is going to be obvious as a result of 150-mile-an-hour winds or even greater, and 12 to 18 inches of floodwaters in the southern portion of Florida, diminishing slightly as it goes north, but it is going to be a storm that has not seen, they haven't seen the likes of this storm for decades, as I understand it. The dramatic mass exodus out of southern Florida could turn into one of the largest evacuations in U.S. history, so I'm told. And as soon as we get Francis Rooney on the line here, he is going to bring us his critique of what's going on in Florida and what the government is trying to do to help his residents. Francis Rooney hails from the 19th District of Florida, and he also serves on the Foreign Affairs Committee and the Education and Workforce Committee. We're trying to get Congressman Rooney on the line right now, so bear with us a second. Here are some of the questions I want to ask him. Where does the money come from? We are told that billions of dollars of relief aid are going to be granted to both the residents of the Houston area, Galveston area, as the result of the hurricane that devastated that area in the last couple of weeks. And we're also told that the aid is forthcoming for this particular crisis that's imminent and coming upon us. How is it distributed? Who is in control of it? How do we know that it's used wisely? How do people apply for it? How do churches participate in granting assistance? Is there more aid granted through private assistance from churches and various different relief agencies such as Samaritan's Purse? Or is the majority of the aid from government sources? These are questions that we'll ask Congressman Rooney. And while I've stalled here for a second, we do have him on board. Congressman Rooney, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I'm sorry I was late. I had trouble finding your number.
Well, that's okay. I think you've got a few other things on your mind right now. Again, welcome to Washington Watch. Thank you for taking a few minutes this evening and joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, okay, you're Congressman from Florida, and I'm sure that you're trying to stay ahead of the curve here with regard to the imminent damage that's going to be caused by Irma as it sweeps its way up through the peninsula. Can you tell us a little bit about the preparations you're making and what you want your residents to know that might be listening to us right now, as well as others that could be helping them?
Well, what we've been doing all week is maintaining very close contact with FEMA, the emergency operations centers in Lee and Collier County, and the first responders in Lee and Collier County to make sure that we're all on the same page, all updated with the latest information, and all getting everything out on our websites to our followers so that they can get the best information possible and know what to do. I've been in a lot of contact with the governor's office, and he's doing a great job of trying to urge people to evacuate and be prepared for some serious storm surge, and we're doing the same thing. And then we're making plans to get down there as soon as possible after the storm passes.
All right, we're hearing two different approaches. When we listened to the news with regard to Texas, we were told that the residents were cautioned not to evacuate with Harvey. But with Irma, the governor has called for evacuation in several counties, as I understand, at least eight or more. Is that correct?
It is. And the reason for that is this is a much bigger storm. It's one of the biggest storms ever. Barometric pressure is one of the lowest that they've ever recorded. It's almost as wide as the state of Texas. Now, not all that's hurricane winds, but it's big. And we're in a very low area. You know, most of the area where we live, Fort Myers and Naples, used to flood regularly before it was developed into an urban landscape.
So are those areas in trouble right now? I think the obvious answer is yeah.
Yeah, we have all the barrier islands and the mangrove barriers that, you know, if we get 6 to 12 feet of surge, that's going to be pretty decimating and get fairly far inland.
How far inland? Do you have any idea?
No, and it's not my specialty to be. I mean, I'm not enough of an expert to know, but you know, it could certainly get far enough to get things right on the coast.
All right. One of the things that, especially with the listenership of this particular program, I know there are a lot of people involved in the church and within the larger body of Christ that want to help. What would you recommend we do if we want to help?
Well, I'm sure Catholic Charities is fully mobilized. I remember during Hurricane Charlie and Hurricane Wilma, Catholic Charities was very involved, and a lot of people helped there. I would contact the Collier County, Lee County, or Cape Coral Emergency Operations Centers because they have ability to embrace volunteers and put them to constructive work under an organized fashion, and they'll be looking for a lot of volunteers.
So you're probably saying don't hop in your car and drive down here as soon as the storm is over because you'll probably get in the way more than you will help?
Yeah, I think so, and that's why we had votes today on the debt ceiling and on the disaster relief, and I thought my main job was to be here and vote for disaster relief money to keep FEMA from running out of money the day before the storm hits. So as a result, I couldn't get out of town in time, so I'll just wait and get down right after the storm. But, you know, these guys are fully occupied. They don't need to be babysitting anybody. They need to be doing their job. One thing that we have done, we've taken measures to set the stage with the cities and county to work with the state to provide FEMA the authorizations to try to get into gated communities. That's a big deal. FEMA won't go into gated communities unless the state requests it, and the state won't request it unless the city declares it, you know, a certain kind of need.
Okay. Now, let's see. My understanding is about $15.3 billion in aid for victims of Hurricane Harvey has already been granted through the Senate version of the budget that was just passed. Is that correct?
Well, what we voted on today, which was the Senate bill, was $15.75 billion divided among FEMA, HUD, and SBA. I don't know the exact allocation. And then another almost $8 billion to go directly to FEMA's disaster relief fund. I don't think all that will be spent on Harvey. I think come Monday, some of it's going to start to be spent on victims of Irma and problems relating from Irma, although I anticipate forthwith we'll have some additional appropriations.
Give us a layman's description. Where's the money come from? I mean, our eyes all cross with confusion when we start talking about these numbers if we don't understand how deal with this. Where's it come from?
Yeah, the money goes to FEMA in their disaster relief fund, and that's money that FEMA can tap to do approved purposes like hire people to clean up garbage and trash and debris, to put tarps on people's houses, to provide food, water, and supplies. FEMA's already pre-positioned stations of food, water, and supplies all around Lee and Collier County to be ready to minimize the time of transport to get aid to the people that need it.
All right. I'm going to ask you a couple last questions before we go to the break, but they're going to be on a different issue. I'm going to ask you about tax reform and then Betsy DeVos's move on education recently. But before we go there, any last word on the hurricane for our listeners?
Well, I just urge our listeners to tune into our website and the other Emergency Operations Center websites, as well as stay tuned to what the governor's saying, you know, and if you can't evacuate, fine. If you can't evacuate, you want to get to high ground. You want to have all the supplies you could have, and we'll just have to ride this thing out together. And once it passes, we'll come together as a community to work like we always work as a community together to repair the quality of life in Southwest Florida.
All right. A couple last questions. Will the Republicans be able to give President Trump what he wants on tax reform, or will he need to continue to court the Democrats to get anything done?
That's a real good question. You know, heretofore, we have not been the House has been successful in passing the health care bill and a lot of other bills. The Senate has not proven very successful in passing much of anything. And I think the House is getting a bad rap because we've done our job. And we will pass a tax reform bill with or without Democrats. I'm confident we will. But what happens over in the Senate is something none of us can vouch for.
Any recommendations, phone calls to make, any direction for the listeners?
Well, nothing seemed to work on the health care bill. But once we get a comprehensive tax reform proposal on the table, one which I hope will include a work requirement for able-bodied welfare, Medicaid, et cetera, recipients that will help alleviate that cost and provide them the opportunity for work and the kind of human dignity that we Christians believe is important, then we're going to want to try to work on the Senate to try to get them to play team ball.
All right, in 15 seconds, tell me whether you agree or disagree with Betsy DeVos's action on Title IX and the Dear Colleague letter.
Yeah, no, I agree. I thought she was very balanced and careful what she said. The Obama administration reacted to a real serious problem, and they might have overreacted a little bit and undermined due process. You want due process, but you want expeditious resolution, and I think she's trying to strike a good balance there.
Congressman Rooney, thank you for joining us on Washington Watch. Blessings as you navigate the hurricane.
Thank you for having me on, and all the best to you for this weekend.
All right, thank you. Coming up next, we'll dig a little deeper into how Education Secretary Betsy DeVos intends to revoke President Obama's 2011 guidelines for schools investigating campus sexual misconduct. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins on Washington Watch. We'll be right back after this break.
Had to make a law, where would you start? Our founding fathers knew that God's transcendent truth must be the foundation for all law. Since the early 20th century, however, truth-based rule of law has changed dramatically in America. The progressive era ushered in big change, shifting our standards to make it appear that truth is ever-evolving. America's founding fathers determined truth from a fixed source, God. But progressives determined that truth originated with man, thereby making it possible to change the truth in order to fit shifting cultural opinions and to undergird the power of those elected in office. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston reveals the importance of truth founded in God and the consequences of moral relativism. Is truth fixed or is it subject to change? The future existence of our free democracy hinges on answering this question correctly. Go to frc.org/decay to learn more.
In America, we face a media onslaught against the Christian perspective. It is now seen as anti-cultural and invalid. Dr. Michael Paulson, a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, talked about how Christians can respond intellectually. Dr. Paulson has researched common arguments against religious liberty. For example, religious values are no different than ethical values. Dr. Paulson argues that the law should give religious exemptions because of the perspective of a religious person who necessarily believes in God as an ultimate source. Religion is different and necessitates a different kind of devotion. Moreover, the Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom of exercise. The Christian perspective is one that is not outdated, but still present and still valid according to the Constitution. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
And welcome back to Washington Watch. Again, this is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, sitting in for Tony Perkins. The call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Remember that number, because while we may not have time to take a phone call within the next two segments, we definitely will be taking calls as we go into the last 15 minutes of the program toward the top of the hour. Again, 866-372-7234 here on Washington Watch through the Family Research Center. Well, I gave you a teaser as we moved into this particular segment with regard to Education Secretary Betsy DeVos and her announcement that she gave in a speech at George Mason University this past Thursday that her department plans to improve upon the counterproductive Obama-era approach to sexual assault and investigations and adjudications on college campuses. Secretary DeVos said this, "The era of rule by letter is over, and the practice of issuing guidance documents that have acted as laws needs to stop." With us now is Michelle Owens. She's an attorney and managing partner with Aggie Owens Law and speaks on behalf of SAVE, an acronym for Stop Abusive and Violent Environments. Michelle, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm delighted to have you, and I have to issue a statement of full disclosure here. As you may know, but the listeners probably don't, Oklahoma Wesleyan University and I, the president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, we are the only university in the nation that filed a lawsuit against this particular letter, this Dear Colleague letter, claiming that it violated the due process of our students as not just the accused, but I would argue also the victim. So I have a horse in this race. I have a dog in this hunt, if you will. So, again, Michelle, why don't you tell us a little bit about SAVE and what it does, and set us up for a couple questions as to what your perspective on this Dear Colleague letter is, and Betsy DeVos's action.
Well, what SAVE is trying to do in regard to the Title IX aspect of an issue, I should say, that's going on in college campuses is make some changes and bring education and knowledge to the general public and just everyone as to what's going on with this. The 2011 letter is what DeVos was talking about when she said that we're going to stop ruling by letter. And for the listeners who don't understand what that is, the Office of Civil Rights is a division of the Department of Education. And there was a letter that was issued under the Obama administration that was reacting to the numerous sexual assaults that happen on college campuses. And they're not as numerous as what people say, but they do happen. And I agree with you that due process rights for the victims were lacking as well as for the accused students. So it does go both ways. But under that Dear Colleague letter, it wasn't law, and it's been interpreted as law by colleges because they're afraid of losing federal funding. And it did several things in regard to sexual assault. The main one is it said you need to investigate and have a department that investigates sexual assault, stalking, rape, sexual harassment, and you need to treat it as if it's a discriminatory action, like you would any other discriminatory action on a college campus.
So let me stop you there.
There are a lot. Yeah.
Do you agree? Do you agree with that particular initiative that you just described?
With the initiative of the 2011 letter to do that, I do not. I do not think a college campus is the right venue to investigate a criminal act. However, I do think the colleges need to do something. And I think what Betsy DeVos is trying to do is change the system. And she made a statement, if you heard her speech yesterday, she made a statement that said, the reason that this was done is because there was a problem, and there were people who were being sexually assaulted on college campuses, and it was not being addressed. I do think the colleges need to address it. I personally do not think that they should have as much control as they do and as much influence and impact into what occurs as they do. There are some suggestions for how to handle this moving forward that are good. I think one suggestion that I like, you know, I haven't done research into it, but was a regional office, I think, that you refer these type of cases to, and then people who are trained and educated in this area, they actually handle the investigation into sexual assault.
Okay, so let me interrupt just real quick here. Spot on, spot on, spot on, as far as I'm concerned, because what you just said, people need to understand. We, meaning the colleges and universities, were told via this Dear Colleague letter that we had to essentially, and I'm going to use my language right now, not yours, convene a kangaroo court of faculty, staff, and students to investigate and adjudicate claims of sexual harassment and sexual assault. Well, I can tell you as a president of a college right now, I do not have trained faculty staff, and I surely don't want students involved in investigating and adjudicating a criminal claim. I want to turn it over to the police, and I want the victim to have the privacy of being able to do so without being victimized again and violated again by being dragged through this kangaroo court. I've only got a minute before music here, so I'm going to give you the last word.
Okay, and I totally agree. The victims are really at a disadvantage because what I do when I'm representing accused students is if they are kicked out of school, we file a lawsuit. And guess who gets drug in as a witness in the lawsuits against the school? It's the victim. And they get tried all over again and have to go through all of the horror again.
And that is part of the problem. The Obama administration is issuing this letter and pretending that it can tell us how to conduct a criminal investigation when a college and university is not the place to do that. I would argue the police department is, the police station.
And I agree. I agree wholeheartedly.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it. We could spend an hour on this particular thing. Obviously, I'm passionate about it. I appreciate you helping us, helping the listeners, helping the folks that watch this program, listen to this program, understand this a little bit more. Coming up next, our culture has emerged as a society where nothing is right and nothing is wrong and everything's up and everything's down and everything's reversed. And we're going to talk to my friend Dr. Peter Jones, and he's going to help us make sense of the nonsense that's prevailing in the LGBTQ arguments and the proponents who believe that sex is fluid rather than a given. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins. We'll be right back after this break.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
And welcome back to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in for Tony this afternoon. Washington Watch, sponsored by the Family Research Council, and brought to you every afternoon, every evening at this time. My next friend is Dr. Peter Jones. Peter is a scholar, an author, and a friend. He's an apologist, a deep Christian thinker and leader. He hails from Great Britain. And he is a professor at Westminster Theological Seminary in Escondido, California. Peter, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good to hear your voice, Everett.
Always good to hear you. We've got so much to talk about in such a short period of time on this segment. I wanted you to come on. I know that we've talked a great deal about the Nashville Statement. And we don't need to belabor that a great deal, but what has been happening in recent days with the Christian community, the Christian I put in quotation marks, the church I put in quotation marks, rising up and protesting those of you and disagreeing with those of us, because I signed the statement also, who wrote, authored, and signed the Nashville Statement, which is basically an orthodox statement of sexual morality, sexual fidelity, and reaffirming 2,000 years of church teaching with regard to the Genesis narrative, and that God created all human beings, male and female, and that should be honored within the church and within culture, that sex is not fluid, sex is a given, gender is a given, and morality is dictated by Scripture. It is not constructed by culture, and it's not an opinion that you and I bring to the table, but it's a stagnant fact that is given by God. I know you agree with all that. You've written accordingly on it. I just want you to talk about what you've been predicting for decades with regard to this this lunacy, this argument that sex is not a given and that sex is fluid. You've been predicting what will happen if we drink this Kool-Aid and buy this lie. Tell us.
That's right. Yeah, well, you know, I'm actually writing a book right now trying to warn evangelicals that if they buy into the agenda of the normalization of homosexuality, they will end up in liberalism and even worse, in paganism. And
I've been following the career of a certain number of these evangelical folks who really don't use the Bible. They use their own feelings and come out with an argumentation to justify homosexuality and employ it were in the church. One of those being David Gushee, who was an evangelical ethicist and wrote a book with Ivy Press affirming the position of the Bible that homosexuality cannot be adopted in the Christian church. This was a position he took, and a few years ago, he changed his mind. He wrote a book defending homosexuality as part of the Christian faith. And just this year, I think it was, he came out and said he's no longer an evangelical. So he's left the evangelical faith. And I've been following this kind of a movement for a year or so. And to my surprise, well, maybe it wasn't to my surprise, when that Nashville statement came out, I had some role in drawing it up and signed it. When it came out, the absolute tsunami of rejection of the statement by people calling themselves Christians just confirmed what I was thinking and just blew me away, because what it is saying, Everett, is that this issue of sexuality has become the red line defining who are biblical evangelical Christians and who are not. And I think that this is the criterion that will, from now on, begin to separate the Christians in the churches, those affirming churches and those standing with the scriptural affirmations. So this is the situation right now. No one expected, I think, that this would happen, that orthodoxy would suddenly be defined by this supposedly peripheral issue of sexuality. But as you reminded me, I have been attempting for a number of years to show what has been happening in the culture. And just a few minutes ago, I was writing...
Peter, 60 seconds to make your summary here on what okay. you want to tell the church in terms of the warning you want to give us. 60 seconds.
Okay, I was writing then that sexuality and spirituality are fundamentally united, and you can't have one without the other. And depending on the kind of sexuality, you will get a certain spirituality. And I've been arguing that oneist spirituality, which is denying that God is separate from us as the creator, will produce homosexuality as a sexual expression. And so I don't see how the church that affirms homosexuality can actually avoid affirming this pagan
Peter,
view of the
what's,
world.
What's your new book coming out, Peter?
When? I don't have a publisher
no,
yet. So
what,
anyone
what's the title?
It, that's fine.
Okay. Peter, thank you for joining Washington Watch. People, you need to go Google Peter Jones. He has a lot of good to say on this particular issue. Again, this is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins here with the Family Research Council and Washington Watch, and we'll be right back after this break. Remember the call-in number is 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Dr. Everett Piper here, sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. We've got the last 15 minutes of the show coming up here. I'm going to start out with a little bit of a monologue. Remember that the call-in number is 866-372-7234. I do want to take some questions during this particular segment. We'll do a little Q&A, obviously. 866-372-7234. I want to follow up first with further commentary with regard to Peter Jones's comment and the moral nihilism that's prevailing across culture and unfortunately, by the reaction to the Nashville Statement, even within the church. Here's an example. Patheos, which is a website that fancies itself as a bulletin board, if you will, for the church. It does not define itself as conservative, so if you go to Patheos, don't be surprised to find some fairly divergent views with regard to what people think within the broader church. You might want to go Google it and read a little bit therein, however, because your eyes will be opened, and many of you will be shocked, and I hope dismayed, by what you read and what you see, because orthodoxy is gone. Right ideas and right thinking is gone, and unfortunately even orthopraxy is being challenged. Orthodoxy is right thinking, or orthopraxy is right behavior. And even within the church, the dialogue, the Q&A, the give and take, the good, robust debate of ideas within the church is no longer governed by orthodoxy or orthopraxy. And here's a case in point. Just yesterday I was reading a blog in Patheos on palamory. Palamory is open marriages, basically. It does not believe in monogamy within marriages. It believes that marriages can be open as long as both partners consent to take on other romantic partners within the marriage. There's a lengthy article within Patheos advocating that the church, not the state, not the culture, not the government, but the church should be sanctioning and celebrating palamory. So the church should no longer hold an objective standard for marriage. So they argue. Everything's subjective now rather than objective. All is defined by either the state or yourself and not by the church or anything transcendent. What kind of culture is left if this is where we're going? What kind of glue will there be to hold culture together? What common understanding and common sense that is common, is there going to be to tell you how to live with your neighbor, with your family, with your husband, with your wife, with your children? What is left? Is this really what you want for your culture? Do you really want to give this much power to the masses to start dumbing down morality to nothing but what they want, what you want, what the subject wants, rather than what is objectively revealed and given to us by God? Do you want to give the government this much power? Do you want the masses to be able to rise up and redefine everything from marriage to morality? And do you want the government to have the power to bless it and sanction it? Is this really what you want? I would argue no, but we need to realize that this isn't just a secular conversation any longer. Sadly, it's a conversation taking place even within the church. And where will this lead? Palomary today, pedophilia tomorrow. In Germany, the Catholic Convert, which is a periodical that I read just this last week, it's called The Catholic Convert, shares this story. Posters in Germany not only promoting homosexuality, but zoophilia. Zoophilia is bestiality. So posters are up around Germany promoting zoophilia. And this is predictable. If you do give up all measures of morality to the whims of the human libido, the sexual imagination runs wild and the masses will get what they want. First the normalization of homosexuality, then gay marriage, then palimony, then pedophilia, then zoophilia. The list goes on and on. The human imagination with a libido that is unhinged and untethered from any objective standard is going to go this way. History proves this. Now, the secular activists clearly don't care. They don't care. We know this. We see it in our culture. We see it in our courts. We see it in the celebration of the waving of the rainbow flag. But that's what they want. What do you want as the church? Does the church care to step in the way, to step into the gap, and to boldly and confidently stand on Scripture, stand on those self-evident truths that are endowed to us by our Creator as an objective standard, a measuring rod outside of those things being measured, so that we can do some measuring in culture, so that we just don't get cast to and fro with every whim and wish of an unhinged libido, but rather we're grounded in the law that is given to us by God and the laws of nature and nature's God. Said it 1,000 times on this program and otherwise, when you get rid of the big laws of God, you don't get liberty. You get thousands of little laws that rush in to fill the vacuum. We are not going to get liberty as the result of abandoning God's laws. We will first get licentiousness, but then that licentiousness will have to be governed by something. And what will step into the gap to govern the licentiousness will be thousands and thousands of little laws that are imposed upon us, not by God necessarily, but by government, because there will be no God-like standard to govern ourselves any longer, so the government will step in to control all of us. What do we want as a church? Do we want moral nihilism? Moral nothingism? Do we want to be cast to and fro with every whim of our culture and of the masses? Or do we want to have the freedom that we can only have within the laws, within the fences that God gives us? I believe I've got a caller right now. Chris from Tennessee, are you still with me?
Hello, Mr. Piper, Dr. Piper.
Chris, welcome aboard.
Thank you. You've been a very busy man. I heard you on Sandy Rios this morning, filling in for Sandy.
I appreciate you mentioning that. Yes, I've been around a little bit with the release of my new book, Not a Daycare. But thank you. But what can I do for you? What's your question?
Well, I don't necessarily have a question. I would just like to point out to people that, when you see all this breakdown of morality and things like that and going after statues and things, don't take these stories that you see in the media for face value just for how the media gives it to you. You need to look deeper and look into other sources. I'll give you an example. The 8 people that were arrested in Durham, North Carolina, openly professed that they were part of the World Workers Party, which is a well-known communist party. What we have here is we have communists attacking our society, our values, breaking down our values, and they're not the only ones. I will never forget when Osama bin Laden had that video broadcast, and he said, "We will destroy you from within. We will destroy you societally. We will destroy you from within your government. We will infiltrate your government. We will do everything that it takes possible to bring you down in more ways than one." And I don't understand why I'm the only person who remembers that. And so, ladies and gentlemen, don't just take all these things at face value. Look into it. If you're curious about, well, who are these people behind this? Do a little bit of research. And that's what they count on, is that you don't have time to do the research.
Well, thank you, Chris. I appreciate that. And you're spot on. I agree that we need to do our research. We need to do our homework. Frankly, I think our culture has gotten lazy. We don't want to do our homework. We don't want to read. We don't want to try to understand the ideas that will prevail within our culture. Ideas are going to have consequences in our culture. And if we don't step into the gap with the biblical ideas, the time-tested ideas, the truth of Christ and the truth of Scripture, those ideas that have endured the test of time. You know, C.S. Lewis told us that before you read a new book, you might want to read about a dozen old books first. Why did he say that? It's because we need to do our research and realize that the old books are still here because they've been tested by time, and those ideas are valid because they're true. They would have been discarded. They would have been cast upon the ash heap of history had they been lies. We need to do our homework and understand that the ideas of God will always prevail if we're prepared to express them, to teach them, to promote them, and to propagate them in a culture that desperately needs the salt and light of the biblical worldview. Chris, thank you for bringing that to light. I'm going to make another comment, and then I've got another caller here. I'm going to ask the producer to remind me what that caller's name is. All right, we're going to go to that caller in just a second, but I want to read a statement from Rosaria Butterfield as to why she signed the Nashville Statement. If you don't know who Rosaria is, you need to Google that name and find out. Rosaria is a rock star. She wrote the gay and lesbian policies for Syracuse University back before she became a Christian. She was a lesbian, and she believed in the LGBTQ agenda. She actually wrote the policies for that agenda at Syracuse. She's a dear sister in Christ today. Here's what she said as to why she signed the Nashville Statement. "I signed the Nashville Statement because I stand with biblical orthodoxy. I signed the Nashville Statement because my conscience compels me to do so, because the promises of liberty on the world's terms are false and deceptive, and because many who currently claim to have Christ's forgiveness and salvation must be called to account for leading good people astray with false promises and filthy lies. I signed the Nashville Statement because the wolves are prowling and the lions are roaring, and because they are bold and proud and their heresy, and because you must be warned." Rosaria Butterfield. I don't know that anybody could say it better. What a great leader for Christ, and you can bet your bottom dollar she's being attacked from every side because of who she is and what her leadership now is within the body of Christ and within the church. Mary, welcome to Washington Watch. What can I do for you?
I was just going to ask the government that they were so scared of Obama for 8 years, and they were too scared to stop him. Only about 10% would fight him. I think it's time for the government to put their boots on and support Trump and clean up the mess that Obama left us through all areas, from religion to government, just everything. It's time to face the fact that we need to stand together as a united country, not divided like Obama wanted us to be.
Thank you, Mary. This is a good segue for me to go into Betsy DeVos's revoking of the Title IX Dear Colleague letter. So important, because it's an example of what you're calling for, Mary, and that's the government to get out of our business and let us do our business. And thank the Lord that Betsy DeVos and Donald Trump have decided to exercise some common sense when it comes to this Title IX Dear Colleague letter. I'm going to go over why this is a problem. Everyone needs to understand this. Again, I'm the only university president in the nation that decided to file suit against this. Everybody else sat on their hands silently. This Dear Colleague letter said that we, meaning colleges and universities, had to start adjudicating and investigating claims of sexual harassment and sexual assault in a different way. Prior to that time, I was given the right to turn a case over to the local police anytime a case came before me. So if a young lady came into my office or anybody else's office at my university and said that she was the victim of sexual assault, the first thing we did is say, we'll take you to the police so you can file a claim and it can be investigated thoroughly, and we'll stand with you in pressing charges. We let the professionals do their business. We let them carry forth. We let them exercise what they had been trained to do, and we let them hold that young woman's claim in confidence as it was investigated so that she wouldn't be victimized again by being dragged before the public. Well, this letter, this dear colleague letter from the Obama administration, tells us that we can't do that any longer. I can no longer exclusively take a claim to the police to let them do their work. I'm now required, but through this dear colleague letter, to convene a kangaroo court of faculty, staff, and peers to investigate and adjudicate this particular claim. Well, what does that mean? It means that this young woman's claim is going to be dragged before a court of her peers. She loses her privacy. She loses all right to due process. She can't just go to the police privately any longer. She has to sit before faculty, staff, and peers and recount the story again and again and again. All privacy for her is lost. What about the accused? He doesn't have, by virtue of this letter, even the right to have legal representation in this court, in this kangaroo court. And he also is going to be subject to not innocent until proven guilty, but rather just the preponderance of evidence. Just the preponderance of evidence, which means that 50% plus one will convict him. Not the presumption of innocence until proven guilty, but just the preponderance of evidence. Betsy DeVos is absolutely right. We are a nation of laws, aren't we? And do we have the right to due process? I would hope so. Are you presumed innocent until you're proven guilty? I thought that's the country we lived in. Does a victim have the right to privacy? Absolutely she should have the right to privacy. And if she knows that it's going to be taken away, what do you think she's going to do? More often than not, she's not even going to make the claim. She's going to be scared off and frightened to do so because she doesn't want to go through the humiliation again. In a constitutional public, this dear colleague letter from the Obama administration should not be worth the paper that it's printed on. And we should be delighted with Betsy DeVos and Donald Trump for challenging them. Thank you for doing so. Oklahoma Wesleyan University stands against this kangaroo court mentality. And we believe in constitutional liberty as governed by the Constitution, not in legislation that isn't even legislation because it ignores the legislative process and pretends to dictate laws by sending us dear colleague letters, which are meaningless. Somebody needs to step forward and challenge this nonsense. Somebody needs to step forward and challenge it. I'm going to close this afternoon with reading one more statement from Hunter Baker, who said this as to why he signed the Nashville Statement. Why did I sign the Nashville Statement? I'll say that one more time, from Hunter Baker in The Federalist. Why did I sign the Nashville Statement? Because I believe my faith amounts to nothing if it merely changes with the winds of culture, as if we are simply worshiping our collective selves. As if we're just worshiping our collective selves. I'd rather worship the God in the Bible than worship the God I see in the mirror. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. Thank you for listening to Washington Watch. And remember, keep fighting the good fight. We know who wins.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.